Hello everyone and welcome to the latest Brewin podcast. Today we return to the subject of UK equities and value investing, and we do so with veteran fund manager Alistair Munday of Investec. Now the content covers not just his specific approach to investment, but also where this leads him in terms of the opportunities and threats. And now the areas covered include banking, retail and pharma. For all this fabulous content, please keep listening, but first here are our disclaimers.
The value of investments can fall and you may get back less than you invested. Past performance is not a reliable guide to future performance. The podcast is not intended as investment advice. No investment is suitable in all cases. Any tax allowances or thresholds mentioned are based on personal circumstances and current legislation which may change. We or a connected party may have an interest in the securities mentioned or may act as principal or agent in those securities from time to time. The podcast content comes from diverse sources whose accuracy cannot be assured. The opinions expressed in this publication are not necessarily held throughout Brewin Dolphin. Investment in currencies other than your own means changes in the exchange rate will cause the value of your investment to move independently of the underlying asset.
Hello everyone and welcome to the latest Brewin podcast. I'm Ben Gutteridge, Head of Fund Research, and today we're going to be looking at value investing in the UK stock market. On that basis, we're delighted to welcome Alistair Munday of Investec, a well-recognised, highly regarded figure in the sphere of value investing in the UK stock market. Alistair, how are you? Thanks very much for joining us.
I'm good, thanks, Ben.
Great. Well, don't give too much away because we're about to ask you actually how life is as a value investor. Perhaps it's a little better so far this year, but we know that value investing as a strategy has been under some pressure for a few years. Then we also want to understand what type of value investor you are, because there are some blurred lines, I think. And then in the second half of the recording, we'll look at where that leads you into the marketplace currently. So let's begin then with life as a value investor. You seem to me to be, whenever I meet you, quite an optimist, but that's not necessarily a trait that permeates across most value investors.
No, that's right. We're quite a dull bunch, to think, aren't we? But dull and perhaps a touch eccentric in the way we look at the world. It's been a challenging time, I think, for 5 years around the world. I'd have particularly hated to be a US value investor in the last 5 years. Not been quite so bad in the UK, but what we've all been up against is falling bond yields. And falling bond yields are great for growth stocks. And we've almost got to a point now where investors just say bond yields are going to be low forever, and therefore value investing is something that used to work in the old days, but is very just old-fashioned. And we would say, well, mind your eye on two things. First of all, bond yields might actually go up at some point from what are in many countries are 5,000-year lows. And secondly, the stocks and the valuations of value stocks are so low now that perhaps they don't even need bond yields to go up much. Perhaps those companies just need to perhaps not disappoint investors and their shares will turn out to be very cheap.
Well, we don't want to be too macro in this conversation. No. Not that you wouldn't be able to deal with it, but what are some of the catalysts, just to remind us, that could get bond yields sort of moving in the other direction, starting to rise again and be of detriment to growth businesses?
Yeah, I think you're right. Let's not get too macro because we don't know what we're talking about, frankly, if we're still doing that. But there's two areas, I'd say. One is if inflation surprises investors, and it has many times over hundreds of years. Inflation can come from anywhere. It can come from wage increases. It can come from central banks printing too much money. And you could argue there's a bit of that in both both areas at the moment. The other top reason bonds can yield more is because there's more supply and demand. So if governments are spending a lot of money and running overdrafts, they need to issue bonds. And that's the way a lot of the major governments of the world are going.
Certainly happening in the US.
Absolutely. And perhaps you get both. Perhaps you get governments spending too much money and wages going up, in which case there's two reasons for bond yields going up. So yeah, I think there's plenty of reasons to believe that inflation isn't dead.
Okay, and then moving on to the type of value investor that you are, because we know that value investing can be a very rewarding but also a very dangerous place. But why don't you just remind us of how you tackle value investing?
Yes, so the way we look at value investing, we say we We say we're really focused on out of favour stocks. They've got to have fallen at least 50% relative to the market. So if the market's been flat over 7 years, our stocks have got to go down from 100 to 50. And we only typically look at FTSE 350 companies, the top 350 companies in the UK market. And you've got to be doing quite bad things as a company to fall 50%. So by the time we see these companies, they're struggling. They're in an area which is in decline. The management's not doing very well. Perhaps the balance sheet's not very good. Or perhaps there's idiosyncratic issues at the company.
So you're not frightened of courting a bit of sort of controversy?
No, we tend to go headlong into a lot of controversy. No one ever comes to our desk and says, well done for looking at that really good company. And they've always say, I knew you'd be looking at that. It's got issues. And it's the question is, can that company solve those issues, or are those issues going to drag the company down? And I've always said to people, we look in other people's dustbins for our buy ideas. And I stand by that. We do look to see what other people are throwing out. But very often when you're in that dustbin, you find a lot of rubbish. So our job is to separate the wheat from the chaff. And at any time, there might be, say, 50 companies in our universe, which are down 50%. But we're only really looking to buy 5 or 6 new ones a year because our average holding period is 5 or 6 years. So, yes, we do a lot of work, we do a lot of analysis, and then we say a lot of the time we agree with the consensus. But every now and again, we find something that's perhaps been misunderstood, and that's where we focus on.
Okay, so there's a lot of work goes into differentiating the wheat from the chaff. Yes. I think that's what you said. But are there any sort of no-go areas?
I don't think there are. No. Virtually everything's got a price. Sometimes it's got to be very low. So there are some areas that really worry us. So like indebtedness. We worry about debt more than other investors. It's not just paying the bills and your debt, which is the problem when debt grows. It's as you've got debt in a business, it means you can't always make the best decisions for the business. You can't necessarily invest as much as you should be doing. So it really affects the way you can compete. Secondly, we worry about the quality of management. Because they are very important. They can spend a lot of that company's money on areas you wouldn't want it spent, or they can refuse to spend on areas where you would want it spent. So they are very important factors, sometimes more important than others, depending on the sort of company it is. Thirdly, is this company in decline? I was talking to some sixth formers recently, and I mentioned ITV, and they looked at me as I've been in prison for 25 years. You've got to accept, We look very big picture. Is this company going to be bigger or smaller in 5 years' time? If it's going to be smaller, that's a headache. ITVs, Royal Mails, those companies have got bigger issues. What we're trying to look at is those companies that have received what we call large but not fatal blows. Decent companies which have just got slightly lost on their path to growth. They're the ones which we think are interesting.
I mean, you sort of bring up the topic of, or broadly there, or implicitly there, disruption. I mean, disruption is such a big theme.
Absolutely.
And are we in a new paradigm of how businesses must operate? I mean, has it really impacted the long-term potential of so many of the businesses in the UK
Yes.
stock market, or is the market sort of overdone those concerns?
Yeah, I completely get disruption, and I'm glad this isn't on the screen, Ben, because you can see how much now. I was using a disrupted shaving company this morning
right,
to shreds. But there is a lot of disruption, but it's not just the companies we look at that are being disruptive. There's disruption everywhere. Artisan, popcorn, craft distilleries, craft breweries, craft ice cream. You can get it everywhere. And what I think it means is there's a lot of competition. Capitalism's well at work in the whole market. And therefore, I'd suggest you should be careful about almost any company you buy for the long term. What does that suggest? It suggests that the average lifespan of a company is perhaps going to be shorter in the next era rather than the previous era, which means it perhaps deserves a lower rating, which I would argue is better for us value investors, because we buy companies on a lower rating. We don't have to necessarily worry so much about them being valued as a growth stock and disappointing. So yes, we do look at disruption, and you just have to find those companies which accept there's disruption and doing something about it. And a good example is Next, where a lot of retailing has gone online, and Next has moved online with it. They've had their old catalogue business, they've moved catalogue to online, they're closing stores, and they're willing to close a lot more stores if that's what's necessary. So I think it's wrong just to write companies off on the basis there is disruption. Can they deal with it is the question.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll sort of get to the areas of interest in the UK stock market. I mean, I guess life has been difficult for value investors, not so much in the UK, because you have to deal with the UK with sort of the large tech businesses.
Yes, yeah.
But of course, the UK stock market has sort of generally been ignored and sold down by international investors. Yes. So on that basis, no doubt you've had not too much trouble finding ideas.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So as I said, our opportunity set of stocks which fall 50% is a variable number. So sometimes there's as many as I think it's got up to 80 or 100 stocks in the past, and sometimes 3 or 4 years ago there were only 30 stocks. At the moment there's about 60 stocks in our universe to look at. What do they have in common? A lot of them are companies that make a lot of their profits and revenues in the UK.
Yeah.
And since the Brexit vote in 2016, those stocks in general have been out of favour. And to be fair, a lot of those companies have disappointed you. The economic backdrop hasn't been brilliant. Those companies haven't shown much profit growth. In fact, some of them have shown complete opposite and seen falling profits. And so they're the sort of opportunities we're looking at. And the question is, are we able to buy them at a very depressed valuation relative to the future level of profits we think they can make?
Well, I mean, you've sort of raised retail and you've talked about the decent, if not good job Next has done in dealing with disruption. Certainly think Next Directory is a great part of the business. Another retailer, Marks and Spencer's, arguably has not executed particularly well in defending against disruption. It's having to sort of backtrack, you know, really using up too much of its balance sheet now. One might cite the sort of the Ocado tie-up.
Absolutely.
But where are you standing on Marks and Spencer's? I guess it's relative to expectations, but there's some pretty low expectations.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's funny, M&S. There's always one stock in our portfolio which gets far more attention than any other stock. And 3 or 4 years ago, it was Tesco. And I think your typical client thinks you've never been into any shops. You live in a fund manager lives in an ivory tower. And we'd been in Tesco, and it wasn't doing very well, but we thought it could do better. And we've also been in Marks and Spencer, and it's quite clear it could do a lot better. But the beauty of it is a lot of its errors, we think, are self-inflicted. It's nothing to do with even Next or Aldi or Lidl or Sainsbury's. It's just about not getting the food on the shelves, not getting the right food, whether the clothing's really right for its customer base. And that their new chairman, Archie Norman, who's got a fantastic corporate history, is very, very clear about their difficulties. And one of the things we love about the management that we back is when they've really got through the denial stage and accept they've got difficulties. And Archie Norman says, we are on a burning platform. Now, lots of people will just be put off full stop by that comment, but that suggests he understands a lot needs to be changed. And as you say, that Ocado deal perhaps stresses how much has to be changed. But, you know, we think the beauty of M&S is its brand still resonates with its customers. Everyone still thinks M&S means quality. We still all want to go into M&S and buy stuff, and a lot of us do. That's the great thing. We go in there for our top-up shops, so they can win the hearts and minds and wallets back of the M&S customers reasonably quickly. And we think Archie Norman has changed a lot of senior management. They are changing a lot of the ways that M&S is run. And we don't think that the brand and the business is dead. But it's going to be a hard turnaround. You know, all hard turnarounds, from our experience, are quite tough. And this has got a number of different issues. But we think it can be salvaged. And as you say, expectations are so low, we don't think they have to do particularly well to get investors back on side.
Now, we're sort of talking about, I guess it's sort of hand in hand with value investing, areas that are less favoured by the markets. But we mustn't lose sight that actually, you know, the value investing, the strategies you manage are having a better time of it, for certain. And no doubt in small part this year, we've seen those UK domestics do a bit better. And in particular, banks seem to be doing particularly well. I know Lloyds and RBS are featuring in your strategies. I mean, again, I guess I'll just sort of ask you, you know, how are those businesses set up? I mean, I guess it's difficult to answer without Brexit coming into, you know, going down the Brexit rabbit hole. But how are those businesses set up?
Yeah, we're trying to avoid the B word for most of this answer. But I think a lot of what we do is behavioural. And it's clear to us that a lot of investors are still very wary of banks, because they remember the damage it did to their portfolio 10 years ago. And they view them as having poor balance sheets, poor management, poor loan books. And we think the world has moved on significantly. And we think the banks are very lucky that they're heavily regulated. That means they're not really allowed to do stupid things anymore. They've been forced to have very strong balance sheets. And the corporate memory of 10 years ago has meant they've stopped doing so many stupid things. And therefore, we think they're completely different beasts. Our ambition for them is to be dull and boring, and we think they're doing a pretty good job of doing that. And come the next financial crisis, you always look in the mirror and at the last financial crisis to look at what to worry about. And we think, well, actually, the rearview mirror is no use there. It's the next financial crisis is going to be very different, and we think the banks could actually surprise on the upside there. We just want them to be dull and boring, have strong balance sheets, generate decent returns for shareholders and pay a lot of those returns out as dividends. And we think we're just about there, but the valuations don't reflect that because I think investors don't believe it yet. And you'd be careful what you wish for, but perhaps almost we need a recession so that these companies can prove that their loan books are much better quality than last time.
Yeah, I mean, you sort of mentioned valuation there. I mean, I don't know to what extent we discussed it in relation to Marx. I know we talked about low expectations, but the valuation opportunity in the context of history, the wider market, presumably really stacks up when it comes to the sort of areas we've already talked about, but in banking,
yes,
in banking sector in particular.
Yeah, I think we're effectively looking at single-digit price-earnings ratios and yields when they're paying out all their profit, or as much of their profits as they wish to, of perhaps 5-6% yield. Now, and we think that 5-6% yield is very sustainable, because otherwise the regulator, through the stress tests, wouldn't have allowed it to be paid in the first place. So we think if these companies can show that 5-6% yield is sustainable, then they'll get a re-rating, because in this world, that's a very impressive dividend stream. So if we can get 5-6% returns from income a year, plus perhaps 1-2% from capital, we're looking at high single-digit returns, which I know that doesn't necessarily excite other people, but over 5 years compound gets you very healthy returns.
It certainly does. Now, it may be impossible now to avoid the B word, but I mean, I know house builders are in the portfolio.
Yes.
Again, are they... Perhaps the investment case sort of lives or dies on sort of getting through or avoiding a disorderly or a no deal Brexit.
Yes.
Presumably you're sort of pretty comfortable or sufficiently comfortable that we can avoid that outcome, or do you think is that your sort of starting position?
Yeah, I think my starting position is a bit different from a lot of other investors. We've got no great view on how Brexit plays out, but our view is the worse it plays out, the more levers the people in power will pull.
Yeah.
Because what we do know is the people in power at the moment, you've got to be careful what you say there, are Remainers. And the Bank of England has been warning against Brexit and has been warning against a no-deal Brexit. Obviously, Hammond, it was a strong Remainer. And therefore, if it got as extreme as a no-deal, we think the Bank of England would bring interest rates down. Hammond would spend some money because he's lucky enough to have quite a bit of money at the moment. And perhaps you'd see some...
And housing would be an obvious candidate for that deployment spending.
I mean, infrastructure spend. So almost, you could argue if people are worried about Brexit, what they're effectively worried about is a deep recession, and we think the likelihood of a deep recession is quite low, and therefore we're reasonably relaxed about buying these stocks. We're not saying
there'll be some noise in the short term.
Absolutely.
But over the 12 month,
yes,
you know, the medium term, these stocks are well are supported on either side.
That's right. And don't get me wrong, that noise could be quite loud.
Yeah.
But that means potential good buying opportunities, and you know, we've got some house building exposure, say through McCarthy and Stone at the moment. A lot of our housing exposure is actually through the repair maintenance improvement companies like your Travis Perkins, Grafton,
yeah,
Kingfisher and B&Q. So, which is, it's all related with the housing market and people being more confident in the housing market. And these companies, we think, have got very good long-term stories. So, yeah, the opportunity to pick some up with a background of volatility would be great.
I mean, I know that is a somewhat different view to the mainstream. But if we do move through a Brexit, if we can look past it, and there is some sort of semblance of a deal, then presumably you look at, you know, the UK employment situation, wages looking decent. Actually, there's a relatively decent backdrop for that type of share.
Yeah, I think there are two things I'd like to pick up there. One is timing. We would argue that other investors think they can time better than us. They can see a recession and know exactly when to buy stocks because of how other investors reacted. We say we're not that good. We're just reacting to the long-term discount to fair value these companies are trading at. So I forgot your other point because I wanted to...
Because the UK economy is in decent shape at the moment, so if we can get through Brexit, presumably...
Yeah, I think that's really interesting because we're so focused on the UK at the moment, UK investors, because that's all the news is. But if you look outside, you know, Europe's got its problems, France in particular's got its problems, China, you could argue there's a debt bubble, clearly America's got all sorts of political problems, and you could argue. So who's to say, once we're through Brexit, that the UK economy doesn't look like a safe haven to other people? And, you know, we're very lucky, the language, the time zone, financial service industry, just the laws of the land. I think we will always attract certain investment, and I think you could argue sterling looks very cheap at the moment relative to a number of other currencies. So I think investors want certainty, and investors, often other investors, are willing to pay up for that certainty, to pay a lot more for a little bit more information. You know, we're willing to pay, buy into that uncertainty, get a great value purchase and accept uncertainty, but we know other people will pay more, and therefore as long as something gets settled and the horizon looks a bit clearer, we can see other people coming back. Yes.
Well, I mean, you make a great case for the valuation opportunity that gets exposure to the UK domestic economy, but the fund is not totally wedded to that. I mean, there are some international, you know, pharmaceuticals, energy, isn't there, in the portfolio? Any other areas of the portfolio worth highlighting?
Yeah, it's interesting because you know, we look at our portfolio at the moment, it's very, very different from our peers. But therefore you might get the impression it's 100% focused on UK domestics. But no, you're quite right. It's well spread. The oil companies, BP and Shell, which we think are doing a lot of self-help work post, I think the oil price a few years ago went very low and they got their feet very close to fire, and really that almost reinvigorated the businesses. Glaxo's interesting because they're heading towards demerger in 2 or 3 years. We like demergers because we think focused companies are better than conglomerates, so we think Glaxo's interesting. And within banking, we think Standard Chartered's a very interesting turnaround business. We like their Asian franchise. It's an area where there are, and there have been over the years, real barriers to entry. And yes, Standard's profitability has struggled for the last few years because the company got rather lost previously with acquisition heavy strategy, but we think that's a really interesting turnaround story. So we think there's lots of other areas. We keep looking out for other out of favour stocks. We're not just a one trick pony. We're not just focused on the UK economy. Lots of stuff falls out of favour, and a lot of those companies aren't necessarily UK focused.
I mean, you're a seasoned value investor. My final question would be, not how old are you? Is in your time in value investing, I mean, we see lots of charts about how the valuation gap between value and growth is sort of near extremes. I mean, are you sort of stood there scratching your head thinking, wow, why aren't investors onto this? This is a golden opportunity. Yeah. Or do you see that there are challenges, conditions, disruption at place that mean actually the valuation isn't so stark? I'm just sort of trying to get a sense of where you see value investing as an opportunity at the moment.
Yeah, I think seasoned, anything ruder than seasoned is a veteran.
I'll do that next time.
But I think what being a veteran and being seasoned means is you've been around the block a few times. I always think 1999 was the worst time to be a value investor and the best time to be a value investor if you survive, because that great opportunities. 2006-07 turned into 2008, once again very good. When we left the ERM in 1992, very young then, but that was a great opportunity. And this one, I think, is one of those great opportunities, but it's hard. And if it was easy, everyone would be doing it at the moment. And I think the history of value investing tells you a lot of value stocks do go down. But when the time they're going down, they drag a number of other value stocks down to very, very cheap levels. And that's what gives you great opportunities in the next value cycle. And that's where we think we are now. We think there's a great opportunity to play value versus growth or quality or however you want to call the other investment styles that have done very well. And we think that elastic band relationship between the two is really at extremes at the moment. And at some point, it's going to bounce back. And typically, it really snaps back quickly.
And maybe that's underway already.
Hopefully. Yes, that'd be nice.
Okay, Alistair, well, thanks so much for spending the time. Really enjoyed talking to you. To our listeners, please let us know what you think on Twitter or SoundCloud or on iTunes, whatever platform you listen to us through, please let us know. But until next time, many thanks for listening.